It's Tuned To Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Sci-fi coming up in this hour from the series 2000 Plus later on. Right now, it's the H.L. Gold story at the Post, first heard on March 27, 1957 on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents...
X minus one.
Tonight, At the Post by H.L. Gold.
When I come into the Blue Ribbon on 49th Street west of Broadway, I could tell right away nobody told Doc Hawkins about my misfortune. Doc, who ain't one really, writes a daily medical column for the Racing Form, and we're celebrating his being sprung from the alcoholic ward. He got one look at me and he choked on a piece of gefilte fish.
What happened? Look at that. Clucker's become a character.
Now lay off, Doc.
Look at that. A gray flannel suit, a black tie. Clucker, where is your purple and green checked sports jacket? Where are your two-tone suede shoes? Why, you've become a character.
That was Zelda's idea. She wanted to make a gentleman out of him.
Wanted to? Why, you two kids got married just before they took... my snakes away. Don't tell me you've fit already.
You don't know, Doc?
No. What happened?
Well, it was right after you tried to take the warts off the fire hydrant that Zelda started hearing voices. It got real bad.
How bad?
Well, she's at Glendale Center upstate. I just came back from visiting her.
Well, did the psychiatrist give you a diagnosis?
Yeah, I got it memorized. Catatonia dementia precox.
Oh, rough. Very rough. The outlook is never good in such cases.
Maybe they can't help her, but I will.
Now, Clocker, you're a race handicapper. You run the best tip sheet on Broadway. But people are not horses. You've got to think of your public. For instance, what's good at Hialeah, huh? My bar bill is about to be foreclosed, and I can use a long shot.
Those couch artists don't know what's wrong with Zelda. I do.
You do?
Well, almost. I'm so close, I can hear the finish line camera clicking.
Now, that's very interesting. Perhaps we can collaborate on an article for the psychiatric journal.
All right, look. Look at these charts. Look, here.
Huh?
I use the same system I used to dope the races. Look, Zelda's got catatonia. She used to be a hoofer before we got married, and now she does time steps all day.
Stereotype movements are typical of catatonia.
You don't get it. She does time steps. The first thing you learn in hoofing, over and over. 10 or 15 hours a day. And she keeps talking like she's giving lessons to some jerk kid who can't get it straight. And I hear when these catatonics pull out, they don't remember much or maybe nothing.
Protective amnesia.
They work harder and longer at what they're doing than they ever did when they were regular citizens. And they don't get a red cent for it.
I beg your pardon.
I said they were getting stiffed. Anybody who works that hard ought to get paid.
I don't understand what you're getting at.
What are they knocking themselves out for if it's for free? Doc, I tell you, I miss that mouse. I gotta save her. She can't see or hear us, but she can sure see or hear something. And I'm gonna dope her.
Clocker, it's too much for you.
Too much for me, huh? Who was it said Warlock had turned into a dog in his third year? Who was it had 7 winners the opening day at Belmont? You take my word for it, Doc. I'll beat the schizophrenia handicap. I hadn't been paying much attention to my tip sheet while I was doping a catatonia dodge. I tell you, I miss Zelda. I missed the bobby pins on the floor and the nylon stuck on a shower rack, the toothpaste tube squeezed from the top. I had to get her back somehow. Next day, I took a cab and went out to that place. I sat in the room and watched her dance. Oh, it was something. Because Zelda was worth watching, even with her eyes blank and her feet shuffling through that simple time step.
Mr. Locke, visiting time is almost up.
All right, Zelda. Listen, Zelda, how long can they take to learn a time step?
She can't hear you.
Look, kid, I don't know who these squares are that you're working for, but tell them if they take you, they gotta take me too, you hear? I had an idea now. I had a dope that Zelda was showing them how to dance, whoever they are. And the only way I could spring her was to find out who was controlling her and what they were after. The first step was to get them interested in me and what I know about racing, doping horses. So I stood there next to Zelda and I started to talk. Now, the first thing you got to figure is bloodlines. You take a horse, you got to know back maybe four or five generations on both sides. Then you got to know where the colt was foaled, what time of year, because all horses are 1 year old on the 1st of January. And there's confirmation, training. You take a horse with good bloodlines, break him in the spring on a hard training surface track, and the first thing you know, you got a horse with a shin splint. Well, they may cover it up, but if you know it's there.
I once knew
a horse ran in Hialeah who was scared of flamingos.
What are you doing?
Had a fine record at Gulfstream and Bowie. But when he got down to Hialeah and got one look at the flamingos, he wouldn't run for beans.
Mr. Locke, are you all right?
Shut up, I'm
Mr.
busy.
Mr. Locke.
You bet on a horse that's scared of flamingos at Hialeah, and you're going to come in with your tail between your legs. Kept coming back every day. I'd just sit there next to Zelda while she did a time step, and I'd talk about horses over and over. And then finally, I started to hear voices.
Clocker! Clocker! This way, Clocker, come this way. This way, Clocker. Come on now, come with me.
Like it was a fog, I could see the attendant in his white coat asking me questions, and I couldn't hear him. I knew I just kept on talking about the horses. And then suddenly, I wasn't there. I was somewhere else. I was in a big square, and the buildings looked like the new Roosevelt Raceway, all modern. Or maybe like the World's Fair. There were trees and statues, and there were hundreds of people standing around, and they all looked scared. There was a little man with bifocals and a vest with pins and needles in it standing next to me. He looked scared. But I knew it had worked. I was on my way to Zelda.
How did I get here? Excuse me, mister. How did I get here?
I don't know.
I can't take time for pleasure trips. I've got a customer coming in tomorrow for a fitting. She'll positively murder me if her dress isn't ready.
She can't murder you. Not anymore.
You mean we're dead?
Don't ask me, but I don't think you're dead. That much I can tell you. Some of the people in the crowd were complaining they had families to take care of, while others were worried about leaving their businesses. And they all grew quiet when a man climbed up on a big platform in front. He was a very tall and dignified guy, and he had formal clothes and a white beard like the chief mourner at a politician's funeral.
Ladies and gentlemen, please feel at ease. You are not in any danger. No harm will come to you. If you will listen carefully to this orientation lecture, you will know where you are and why.
What is it? I don't understand.
It's a pitch.
Friends, I know you are puzzled at all this. Now let me explain. You've been chosen, yes, carefully screened and selected, to help us in what is undoubtedly the greatest cause of all history. You will learn more about it as we work together in this vast and noble experiment.
What experiment? What is it?
I got it picked. This is a pitch. These guys are out for something. Smells like a con.
Let me state this in its simplest terms. Now, you know that there are billions of stars in the universe and that the stars have planets. A good many of these planets are inhabited. In almost all instances, the dominant form of life is quite different from yours. I am not of your planet or solar system. I am not formed as you see me. My true appearance would seem to be rather confusing to human eyes.
Nuts, get to the point.
The truth is, we are not here, and neither are you. Here is a projection of thought. A hypothetical point in space, a place that exists only by mental force. Actually, our bodies are on our own respective planets.
What's he saying? What does he mean?
Wait, he'll give us the convincer after the buildup.
Our civilization is considerably older than yours. For many of your centuries, we have explored the universe both physically and telepathically, and during this exploration, we discovered your planet. We tried to establish communication, but there were grave difficulties. And it was the time of your dark ages. And I'm sorry to report that those people we did make contact with were generally burned at the stake.
Here it comes. He's getting ready to slip us the sting.
Well, I don't think you ought to say a thing like that about a fine, decent gentleman. He's obviously very sincere.
The problem we face is that the human race is doomed. The history of your race is a record of incessant wars, each more devastating than the last. And now, finally, man has chained the power of worldwide destruction. The next war, or the one after that, would unquestionably be the end not only of civilization, but of humanity, perhaps even of your entire planet. Then, why have we brought you here? Because man, in spite of his suicidal blunders, is a magnificent race. He must not vanish without leaving a complete record of his achievements. Now, this is the task we must work together on. Each of you has a skill, a talent, a special knowledge we need for the immense record we're compiling. Every area of human society must be covered. And so we need you urgently. Your data will become part of an imperishable social document that shall exist untold eons after mankind has vanished.
Oh, he had a slick con. He had that crowd in the palm of his hand like a small-time grifter selling pearl necklaces on 6th Avenue. They all cheered. They were all flattered to think that they were joining in this vast project to make a record of the human race. After a while, they broke us up into divisions, and I got herded into a building marked Sports and Rackets. They took my name and my occupation like I was applying for unemployment insurance.
Now, here's our problem, Mr. Locke. We're making two kinds of perpetual records. One is written, more precisely, microscribed. The other is a wonderfully exact duplicate of your cerebral pattern, in more durable material than brain matter, of course.
Of course.
The substance we use in place of brain cells absorbs memory quite slowly. But you'll be happy to know that the impression once made can never be lost or erased.
Delighted, tickled to pieces.
I knew you would be. Well, let's proceed, shall we? First, a basic description of horse racing.
I started telling them about horse racing, but they held me down to one sentence. They said I had to repeat it over and over so that that recording thing could get it. They had a picture of my body back on Earth lying in a bed in a hospital just saying that one sentence over and over again.
Well, that's enough for today. Isn't it amazing? We have a more detailed record of human society than man himself ever had. Your life, my life, the life of this Zelda whom you came here to rescue, all are trivial. For we must all die eventually. But the project will last eternally.
You're telling me you know what I'm here for?
To secure the return of your wife. I would naturally be aware that you'd submitted yourself to our control voluntarily. It was in your file that was sent to me by admissions.
Then why did you let me in?
Because, my dear friend, we also...
Look, leave out the friend pitch. I'm here on business.
As you wish. We let you in, as you express it, because you have knowledge that we should include in our archives. We hoped you'd recognize the merit and scope of our undertaking. Most people do, once they're told.
Zelda, too?
Oh, yes. Yes, Zelda's extremely cooperative, quite convinced. Would you like to see her?
Yeah, sure I would.
Well, that can be arranged. I'll call the Arts and Entertainment section and arrange a meeting.
Zelda, baby.
Clocker.
Let's get out of here.
Oh, hello, Clocker.
Aren't you glad to see me? I spent months and shot every dime I've got just to find you.
Well, sure, I'm glad to see you, hon, but I can't waste any time. This work is so important.
I want to talk to you. That con artist with the white beard
said... Oh, isn't he wonderful, Clocker? Aren't they all wonderful? Regular scientists devoting their whole lives to this terrific cause.
What's so wonderful about that?
They could let the Earth go boom. It wouldn't mean a thing to them. Everybody wiped out, just like there never were any people. Not even as much record of us as the dinosaurs. Gee, wouldn't that make you feel simply awful?
I wouldn't feel a thing. All I'm worried about is us, baby. Who cares about the rest of the world doing a disappearing act?
I do, and so do they. They aren't selfish, like some people I could mention.
Selfish? You're darn right I am. Zelda, listen. I'm selfish because I got a wife, and I'm nuts about her, and I want her back.
I have to help out on this project. It's the least I can do for history.
History? What did history ever do for us? Go turn in your time card, baby. Tell them you got a date with me back on Earth.
No, this is my job as much as theirs. More, even. They don't keep anybody here against their will. I'm staying because I want to, Clocker.
But, honey...
Excuse me, I've got to get back. I'm teaching them the soft shoe now.
Are you satisfied now, Mr. Locke?
Listen, take away the doom pushing his racket folds. Listen, suppose you're all square. Suppose you're leveling. You're knocking yourself out because your guess is we're going to commit suicide.
But is there any doubt of it? Do you honestly believe the Holocaust can be averted?
I think it can be stopped, yeah. Listen, between these catatonics and me, we could tell them what it's all about. I notice you got people from all over the world here. They're getting along fine because they have a job to do and don't have time to hate each other. Well, it could be like that back on Earth.
Mr. Locke, we have experimented in the manner you suggest. But a human psychological mechanism defeated us.
Yeah? What was that?
Protective amnesia. They completely and absolutely forgot everything they'd learned here.
Well, what are the odds on me remembering?
Well, you are our first volunteer.
Look, I'll give you a deal. You let me out, and maybe I'll be the first case that didn't get amnesia, and I can tell the world all about this. I'll come back if I lame out. You can pick me up any time you want. If I make headway, you gotta let Zelda go, too.
That's a very reasonable proposition. We'll lift our control, Mr. Locke, for a suitable time. If you can arouse a measurable opposition to racial suicide, measurable, mind you, then we agree to release your wife and revise our policy completely.
I came to at Glendale. It took me about 2 weeks to convince them that I was all right again. But I had to convince the world that they were throwing a race and that they needed a saliva test. So I started to write it all out in my tip sheet, in and around the horses. Around that time, I ran into Doc.
Clocker, my boy, you've no idea how anxious we were about you. But you're looking fit, I'm glad to say.
Thanks. I wish I could say the same about you and the rest of the world.
No need to worry about us. We'll muddle along somehow.
You think so, huh?
I'm glad to see you've got your tip sheet going again. As long as the bobtails run, who cares what happens to anything else?
Of course, nobody listened to me. I had posters printed telling everybody. I hired sandwich men to walk through the city. I made speeches in Columbus Circle. I told everybody doomsday was near. I sent letters to Congress, to the UN, editors of newspapers. Nobody paid any attention. I sneaked into the balcony of the General Assembly and tried to shout a speech, and they threw me out, very politely. I wrote the whole thing up for a magazine, and they printed it and sent me a check and told me if I had any more fiction, they'd be glad to run it. They kept trying to tell everybody the truth about the catatonics. We ought to go to the hospitals and get ourselves let in and have the aliens take over and show us where we're going. But nobody would listen. And then finally, I went back out to Glendale.
Oh, Mr. Locke, we were wondering when you'd come visit your wife. You've been away?
I want my old room back.
But you're perfectly normal.
Give me half hour alone, and you'll be glad to give me my room. Well, here I am back again.
Oh, Mr. Locke.
Okay, I'll give you all the rest of the dope on racing. You won't have any trouble with me.
Then you're convinced... You failed.
I'm no dummy. I know when I'm licked.
So do we, Mr. Locke. Naturally, you have no way of detecting the effect you've had. We do. The result is that because of your experiment, we're gladly revising our policy.
Huh? Is this a rib? Nobody listened to me.
Oh, but they did. Visits to catatonics have increased considerably. When the visitors are alone with our human associates, they tentatively follow the directions you gave them in your article. Not all do, to be sure. Only those who feel as strongly about being with their loved ones as you do about your wife. We've accepted 4 voluntary applicants.
You mean I made it?
That's right. Before long, we shall have to increase our staff as the numbers of voluntary applicants increases geometrically, and then we'll be able to release the first group to go back and carry the message. Whenever you care to, Mr. Locke, you and your wife are free to leave.
Okay, but I'll tell you what. I owe you plenty. I'll help make that record before I go. I'll teach you how to dope the horses. Is that what you want?
Why, yes.
All right, then, let's go. The quicker we get started, the quicker we can get back.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features A Touch of E-Flat by Joe Gibson, a story with a warning. Never let anyone point any weapon at you, even something as harmless-looking as a water pistol. It may be a cooling gun. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X-1 has brought you At the Post, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by H.L. Gold and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Frank Maxwell as the clocker and Thomas as his time-steppin' wife, Zelda, Arnold Moss as the otherworldly one, John Griggs as the doc who wasn't one, really, and Sam Raskin as the confused little tailor with his mouth full of pins. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Kenneth McGregor and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1, on Tuned 2 yesterday from March 27, 1957, on NBC. That story, At the Post by H.L. Gold, would be used again on the series in August of 1957. He had 2 other stories contributed to the series, Project X, and another memorable story used twice on the series about a year apart, The Old Die Rich. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now 2000-plus from the Mutual Broadcasting System from November 29th, 1950. It's the story, Worlds Apart.
Program transcribed earlier for release to our West Coast audience at this more convenient listening time.
Central Operational Headquarters, Commander Dystra speaking. This morning at 400 hours, our electronic scanners picked up on oscillator frequency an unidentified spacecraft in Sector K beyond the gravitational field of the planet Mars. Our calculations indicate that this craft will arrive in Space Sector G within the next 24 hours. Emergency directions to all defense units. Coordinate high voltage destroyers to cover Area G. All units on alert for assault action.
To learn what happened when a strange craft from outer space came into Sector G, listen in a moment to 2000 Plus. In the world of tomorrow. Dramatic stories of science fiction from the years beyond 2000 AD. Today, the strange adventure of men who dared the unknown through interplanetary space. Worlds Apart.
And one thing more, Johnson. Your new Alimoid spacesuit has been tested, and it's everything you claimed it to be. Light, pliable, fireproof, a splendid product. We'll want 50 of them in time for the next space flight 3 weeks from now. Can you make it? Excellent. Good luck, Johnson.
Yes?
Your son is here, Mr. Granger. He wants to see you.
Jim here? Well, tell him I can. Oh, all right, send him in.
Yes, sir.
And Miss Ames, tell Robert he can start punching tape for the mechanical pilot on Flight 17.
Yes, Mr. Granger.
Hello, Dad.
How are you, Jim?
Dad, I've come to ask a favor of you. A big favor.
Well, talk fast, son. I'm very busy. What is it you want?
I want to be assigned to Flight 17.
What? Flight 17? To Neptune? Well, are you crazy?
No, Dad. I've been thinking about this for months.
Well, you can stop thinking about it right now. There's no opening for you, sir.
I happen to know there is, Dad. Golding's down with a bad case of acceleration bends. They'll need a new rocket engineer.
But you're too young, too green.
I've done 42 experimentals and 3 moon hops. I'm ready.
Ready? Well, this is an uncharted trip, Jim. A trailblazer. You know what happened to the first flight to the moon, don't you?
Yes, sir. Crashed on the lip of a giant crater.
Yes, and the first ship that tried to reach Mars.
Went haywire and shot off into deep space.
And still you want to make this first flight to Neptune?
Yes, sir.
Well, you have courage, son, I'll say that. But you're not going.
Why not?
Jim, it's not up to me. Captain Roberts chooses his own rocket engineer. You know, all I do is okay the man he selects.
Then I guess I'll be making the flight then. You see, I persuaded Captain Roberts to select me.
Captain Roberts on spaceship Phoenix on flight to Neptune, calling Marshal Granger, Control Station 2. Roberts calling Granger. Are we still in contact? Roberts calling Granger. Do you read
us? Granger, Control Station 2. We read you, Roberts. We're still in contact. Go ahead, Roberts.
Ready to report, sir.
Proceed.
At the end of 120 hours of flight, conditions are entirely normal. Crew and passengers have passed safely through 5 accelerations. We are cruising now at a speed of 12 galactic miles per second.
Excellent, Roberts. Continue.
Astrogation reading. Take it, Sandy.
Astrogator Lawson reporting. Our position in space-time units, 17 hours, 4 minutes to the Mars-Jupiter axis, sector G. 23 degrees off the plane of the ecliptic.
Exactly on course, Lawson. Well done.
Rocket control. Take it, Jim.
Rocket engineer Granger reporting. Average rocket discharge rate, 12.7. Consumption level, 19%. Available supply, 300 hours with B2 safety factor.
Good work, son. Congratulations, all of you. Keep it up.
Thank you, sir. Signing off. Everything okay back in the lounge, Jim?
Oh, quiet a few minutes ago when I passed through.
How about that chess game? Those two physicists still at it?
they're in no hurry. 50,000 miles to a moon.
Real thriller. And the music lovers?
Wearing a groove in Beethoven's 5th. You know, I don't see how anybody...
Dick. Yes?
Watch your controls, pal. We've been swinging off course.
Off course? Well, you're nuts, lad. I haven't taken my eye off the chart for a second. We've been right on the line.
I'm telling you, we're off course, Dick. 6 points. Better bring her back.
You sure, Sandy?
Am I sure?
Oh, sorry, Sandy. Stupid question. Stand by for directional correction.
Standing by.
Lateral deviation, 6.2. Speed, 12. Magnetic index, gamma 5.
Port side and auxiliary rockets, 5, 7, 13, 15. Ready to discharge. Discharge.
Well, that's that. I still don't understand.
Wait a minute, Dick. Something wrong.
Huh? Wrong? What do you mean?
We're off again.
What are you talking about?
We swung into line for a second, then we pulled right out again.
Oh, but that's impossible, Sandy. There isn't any wind drift or current out here in space. Anything in motion moves in a straight line until it comes within the magnetic field of some body.
That's what I'm afraid of, Dick. I think we're caught in the toe of some tremendous mass.
Now what mass, Sandy? The sun, Mars, Jupiter, everything's where it belongs, isn't it? There aren't any unknown bodies floating about.
Maybe there are.
Maybe
there...
Like what, Sandy?
A comet.
A comet?
Yeah, a comet. That's what it must be. A wild, uncharted comet from outer space.
Look, Dick. The atmosphere gauge is way up. We're not flying through a vacuum. There's something else out there now, some sort of atmosphere.
Gas. Hot gases forming the tail of the comet.
You're right, Sandy. Listen. Hot gases and other things, too. Sounds like pellets of some kind. Stone.
They're fragments. Meteorites. All trailing behind the comet. The Kartik, caught right in the middle of it.
The ship is beginning to spin.
We'll be dragged clean out of the solar system, perhaps out of the galaxy.
Oh, maybe not, Sandy. There's one chance. Maybe we can blast ourselves free. Alert. Alert. All personnel to emergency acceleration couches. Prepare to discharge all port side rockets.
Do you know what you're doing? 127 rockets going off at once. Or you'll blow us a bit.
Our only chance, Jim. Here goes. 5 seconds. Discharge.
Granger, control tower, calling spaceship Phoenix. Granger, calling Phoenix. Come in, Phoenix. Granger to Space Patrol, special alert. Spaceship Phoenix, bound for Neptune, missing 12 hours. May be lost or out of control. All units stand by to intercept signals, if any. Frequency, 40,000. Relay any information to Marshal Granger, Control Tower 2. That is all. Where are you, son? Where are you?
Passengers are dead, but we're out of it, Dick. Something threw us clear of the comet, some centrifugal force.
Help me up, Jim, quick. Give me the control panel.
Take it easy, Dick. All right. Here we go.
Oh, my head. Jim, how's the power plant?
Half the rocket engines are out.
And the boosters?
Seem to be okay.
Good. We got enough to operate on.
Maybe.
What do you mean?
The nuclear overdrive is shot.
Shot?
Smacked by a meteorite.
Jim, we got to find out where we are. We can't afford to waste a unit of power. Do you know anything about astrogation?
Not a thing. Beyond the moon, I'm lost.
Oh, that's great. A crippled ship lost somewhere in space and a dead astrogator to show us the way.
I'll have to make a wild stab at our position. What's your guess, Dick?
Well, how can I guess? We may be near Neptune or way out near some far-off galaxy. Let's take a crack at that radio relay.
I've been trying all along. Can't raise a thing.
Well, keep trying. It's our only chance. I'll take a look through the port, see if I can make out anything.
Spaceship Phoenix calling Earth stations Mars, Jupiter, Earth. Spaceship Phoenix, are we coming through?
Can't recognize a star, a planet, an astral body. Jim?
Spaceship Phoenix, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
How long is it since we blanked out?
Can't say, Dick. All our instruments went haywire. Spaceship Phoenix, flight 17 for Neptune in distress. Are we coming through? Answer us. We may have...
Dick, listen.
Spaceship Phoenix, you are coming through. We hear you.
Oh, we've got him. They heard us.
No, it can't be. Give me that mic.
Hello, this is Space Flight 17. We're off our course and badly damaged. Our position, unknown.
We have located your position, Spaceship Phoenix. Stand by, please.
Jim, that's Earth. We're blown or sucked the world right back toward Earth.
Hello, Phoenix. Are we still coming through?
Like music, sir.
Very well. We're going to bring you in on a beam if you're within range. Does the signal reach you? Please acknowledge.
Got you. Got you perfectly.
Good. Set your degravitators and disengage all engines.
We're in free flight, sir.
Instruct all personnel to get into acceleration compensators. We'll land at our spaceport in approximately 4 hours.
Ranger to engine room. Landing jets fore and aft. Discharge.
50 feet. Release airlock. Switch on landing lights. 10 feet. Prepare to land. Contact. Cut motors.
We've landed, Jim. We made it.
Don't I know it? Come on, pal. Out you go.
Oh, take your time. We're in no rush now.
You may not be, but I am. In a rush to get down to good old terra firma. Oh, boy, does this air smell good.
What a spaceport, Jim. I didn't know we had anything anywhere that looked like this.
I don't care what it looks like. All I know is that...
Here comes someone.
Hello.
Hello there.
I'm Captain Roberts of the Phoenix. Are we glad to see you?
Then where you are.
Hey, what's the idea? Well, you don't understand. I said I'm...
Don't move. Captain Roberts, you and your crew and your passengers are all under arrest. Elfin Smith, take over the ship and seal all the exits. No one is to leave. Captain Roberts, you and your companion come this way, please.
By what authority are we being held prisoners? I want to know. I have the right to demand to know.
Captain Roberts, you're hardly in a position to demand anything.
Well, what is my position, sir?
The title is Commander. Commander Dystra.
Commander? Commander, you know that you will be held responsible for any harm to my passengers or ship.
There's no cause for alarm, Captain. Or threats. Simply holding you here at Green Valley for a short while till we check your credentials.
You've inspected our ship. You know we carry no contraband. Since when does an American have to have his credentials checked in his own country?
I've already explained to you that this entire area, all 500 square miles of it, is government property, devoted exclusively to secret research projects. Now, is it perfectly obvious why we can't allow you and your passengers to walk about freely?
Maybe, but it isn't obvious why we're not allowed to use the visiphone. Why we can't call our base, report our safe landing.
Perhaps not, Captain Roberts. But then, government regulations often are obscure.
Commander Dystra, we were met with guns and suspicion. Now, you say that was because secret research is going on. Yet when you contacted us above the Earth's atmosphere, you offered to bring us in here. Why did you make that offer if you didn't want us here?
Would you rather be back in space, floundering about in your crippled craft?
That can be arranged.
You haven't answered my question. We brought you in for two reasons. First, to save your lives if you turned out to be harmless. Second, because it is our policy to apprehend all craft entering our space sector.
We have enemies.
For the high-handed methods you use, I can see why. Not high-handed, Captain Roberts. During your detainment here, you and your company will be accorded full courtesy.
We appreciate your courtesy, but we demand the right to contact Chicago here, now, and on that visiphone.
I'm sorry, that is impossible. Donna.
Yes, Commander Dystra?
Arrange for suitable accommodations for Captain Roberts and his crew. The interview is closed.
Commander Dystra, I...
That is all, Captain! Send out a special bulletin to the Science Institute, to all chiefs of the following departments: astrogation, navigation, anthropology, astronomy. Is there anywhere in this solar system or in adjoining constellations a body known as Planet Earth or America? Is there any community, area, or experimental station known as Chicago?
I won't take this lying down.
No?
What are you going to do about it?
Think of something. I'm certainly not going to sit around twiddling my thumbs while the great Dystra checks our credentials.
I don't like the looks of this place any better than you do.
Secret project, he says. For all we know, it may be the headquarters of some gangster out there.
There are a lot of things about this Green Valley setup that bother me. Nothing definite. I just get a feeling that everything's a little lopsided. As if I were looking at it through a Coney Island mirror.
Oh, easy now, Jim. You'll be going bats if you...
Take it. I've got it.
Got what?
That visiphone. If
we can get into Dystra's office some way, we can phone home.
Oh, no, no. You're way off, Jim. There isn't a chance in a million.
Why not? This room's not locked. They finished work for the day. We saw everybody leave.
All right. All right, we'll try it. But, Jim, watch your step, will you? I feel sort of responsible for you.
Here's the office. So far, so good.
Try the door.
Open.
Inside fast. It's very dark in here.
But... Now, where was that prison phone?
Oh, it's right here. Put the call in, but don't light the scanning cone. I'll use this pocket flash.
You listen for anyone approaching. Here goes.
Your call, please.
Get me Marshall Granger in Chicago.
Chicago? Where is that?
Chicago, Illinois, USA. Come on, operator.
USA? What place is that near?
Didn't you hear me? I said USA.
I will check it, sir. If you...
I'm coming, Jim. Drop it quick. We'd better get out. There's two ladies in the corridor. Stand back here in the corner.
Hello? Hello? Someone is here. Please come forward. I know you are here. I can hear your heartbeats. There are two of you there in the back. Please come forward. Oh, this is very childish. Now, that is better. Now we can put on the lights.
Good evening, Commander Dystra.
Captain Roberts.
Congratulations, sir. A very impressive trick, hearing a heartbeat across a 40-foot room.
Trick? Not at all, sir. If it seems strange to you, your hearing must be impaired.
You know why we're here, I suppose.
It's obvious. You're trying to use the visiphone against orders. You gentlemen have abused your privileges as guests. From now on, you will be held prisoners under lock and key.
Brought you your food, gentlemen.
It's about time.
Well, this is a fancy touch. A woman jailer.
My name is Dawna, Captain Roberts. I'm Commander Dystra's assistant. We just remembered you hadn't had any food tonight.
That's very touching. Thank you very much.
Now, take it easy, Jim. She's just carrying out orders. Dawna, it was very kind of you to bring us this food, but there's something we need even more.
Well, what is it?
We need some information. We're going mad.
Well, if there's anything I can tell you...
Anything. You can start talking now and continue all night. First, where is this place? Where are we?
You're in Green Valley, Captain.
Green Valley. Where is Green Valley? What continent is it on? What is it bounded by?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that.
You're wasting your breath, Dick. She won't talk.
Then tell me this. How long have you been here?
All my life. I was born here 57 years ago.
You look like 20. How old is Dystra?
92.
And he can hear a heartbeat at 40 paces?
My hearing is even better. Listen. Do you hear the dogs barking in the distance?
Nuts. These people are a terrific hoax, or we've wandered into some weird out-of-this-world madhouse. Good night, Donna.
Good night, gentlemen. I wouldn't try anything foolish.
Shangri-La. Yes, that's where we must be. The place someone wrote about back in the 20th century. If you ask me,
Granger.
It's probably the place.
Dick, listen.
Huh?
Granger. Roberts. The window. There's someone below. Hello there. Who is it?
It's me, Reynolds.
Reynolds, the chess-playing physicist.
Reynolds, how'd you get out? What are you doing down there?
I escaped while the others distracted the guard. I'm making a dash for it.
Dash for what, Reynolds?
There's a small plane at the far end of the field. I spotted it this afternoon. Will you come with me?
It's pitch black out there. You'll never find it.
I'll find it if I have to feel my way.
You're mad, Reynolds.
We've got to get away, Roberts. Don't you understand? This place, it's unnatural. I've seen things that have made my hair stand on
end. Now, Reynolds, listen to me. Don't go now. Perhaps tomorrow everything will be all...
No, not tomorrow, now. Are you coming, Roberts? Ranger? Very well. When I come back with help, I hope you're still alive.
Now, wait, Reynolds. Come back.
Gone.
Oh, I hope he knows what he's
doing. Dr. Reynolds, you are out of bounds.
That's Dystra.
Come back, Dr. Reynolds. We cannot permit you to go any further.
around anywhere. How do they know where Reynolds is?
Station 7, stop that man.
I think you're foolish to refuse the food we've been sending you. You haven't eaten all day.
Please put it down, Dawn, and go away.
Commander Dyster wishes me to express his regrets. The injury to Dr. Reynolds was most unfortunate.
Tell Commander Dyster he'll pay for this. Tell him I said...
The electronic beam merely paralyzes temporarily. It leaves no permanent mark. Dr. Reynolds will recover.
How did they manage to hit him in the dark?
Well, I don't understand. We see very well in the dark. Well, good night, gentlemen. Please eat your food. Commander Dyster will be offended if you don't.
Mustn't offend Dyster, must we? Well, here goes this tray out of...
Jim, wait. It's foolish, really. We'll only get weak if we don't eat. Too weak to help ourselves if an opportunity comes along.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Feel a little lightheaded already. Hand me that jug of milk.
Oh, here. Pour one to me, too, will you? 3 days we've been here. He could have checked our credentials a dozen times.
Well, happy landing.
Bottoms up.
Jim, look out. What is it, Dick? Why'd you knock the glass out of my hand?
Did you see the color of that milk? Green.
Green? Green milk?
Poison, that's all I can think of.
Of course. Please eat your food, she kept saying. Come on, let's open that window and get rid of this tray. Here goes compliment to Jim Granger.
What?
When is it going to land? I didn't hear a sound.
Did you see it as it went down? That heavy metal tray, that big jug, the glasses, they didn't fall, Jim. They sort of floated down.
As if somebody had messed around with the force of gravity. They reduced the pull of the earth here at Green Valley, Dick.
Maybe that's one of their secret projects, an anti-gravitational force.
Dick, I'm going to find out.
What are you climbing up on that windowsill for?
Well, if it works for a tray full of dishes, why won't it work for me? I'm going to jump out, Dick. There's only one way to find out. Take a big jump. Just walking around doesn't give the answer.
It's 3 stories. You'll land smack on those rocks below.
Well, if I make it, you follow. And if I don't...
I don't do it. Wait, don't jump.
Hold on, Dick. I'll be seeing you.
You hurt?
Just a bruise. It was like a jolt at the end of a parachute jump.
I think I'm going out of my mind, Jim. All those fantastic things that have happened since we landed here. The visiphone operator who never heard of Chicago or the USA.
And Dyster could hear a heartbeat across the room and see in the dark.
Donna, 57 years old, looking like a chorus girl.
Green milk.
And a reduced gravitational pull.
I don't like it. I want to get out.
And there's our ship out in the middle of the spaceport, prepared and ready to go.
Yeah, maybe we could... Dick, I just noticed something.
Yeah?
Last night it was pitch dark, but now...
Now there's a full moon. What's so strange about that?
Take another look at that sky. There, over the rim of the horizon.
Another moon? A second moon? What fools we've been. Don't you see what this means? We're not on the Earth at all. We've landed on some alien planet. We must get to Dystra at once.
Yes, that is it. That explains the things that puzzled us. Your reference to Chicago, to the Earth. The small, strange differences between us.
It's not the differences that bother me now, Dystra. It's the uncanny, incredible similarity between your planet and ours.
Is it so incredible, Captain Roberts? We've shown you our astronomical charts. Our planet, Vesta, is exactly opposite the Earth, on the other side of the sun.
Yeah, that's why we never discovered each other.
We are 90 million miles distant from the sun. You are...
93 million miles. Well, no doubt both planets split off from the sun at the same time. Vesta is a little smaller than the Earth, and that fact, plus its nearer distance to the sun, gives us less gravity, but otherwise our development has paralleled yours completely.
Even in appearance and in culture and language, you've reached precisely the same stage of development we have.
Well, it simply proves, Granger, that similar conditions may produce the same results.
One thing still bothers me.
Yes?
How do you stay so young, so vigorous?
That, it is simple. We live in peace and harmony. Our only concern is interplanetary threats.
That's why you were so rough on us.
Precisely.
Well, now that we understand each other, may I use your visiphone?
You want to call Chicago?
No. I want to call our crew and passengers and tell them to get ready for the journey home.
Incredible adventure from the world of tomorrow, when a scientist crosses the border of what is known into the strange mysteries of the unknown. Be sure to listen.
2000 Plus on Tuned to Yesterday from November 29th, 1950 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. And that brings to a close this hour of Sci-Fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.